where they need to bring in a Robin to Oladipo's Batman, they need to make sure they don't bring in a Robin to Brook Lopez, because that would just be a disaster. Welcome to Sports the Podcast. I am your host, Mike Lavery. On this pod, we call experts and dissect what's happening in sports. I'm very excited to announce that we launched a new podcast, Things the Podcast, in which we talk about non-sports related things. The first episode drops today on this feed, just so people can see it. And then it's going to have its own feed by the time you hear this, so keep an eye out on most of your streaming services. Today we have our newest writer that I'm very excited to have on the team, Sean Valiente, to talk about NBA playoffs, and welcome him to the staff of Sports the Website. What is going on, Sean?
Hey, Mike, how's it going? I'm doing pretty well, currently being attacked by my cat, but other than that, can't complain. Pretty excited about all the basketball that's going to be happening this week.
Yeah, we're very excited to have you on the staff. We're very excited to talk today. So far in the playoffs, we're just about halfway through. So when we're recording this, just so people know, the first two rounds have happened, and we have two more rounds. I think the first game's tomorrow?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
It goes Celtics Monday and then Wednesday, and then they get like 4 days off, and it's real dumb.
Weird. So through the first half of the playoffs, what do you think so far?
It's been probably the most fun first round that I can remember in quite some time. The opening rounds with the Cavs and Indiana going seven games, and Celtics and Bucks going seven games, Thunder and Jazz, just all these kind of really fun matchups. It reminds me of, God, it must have been like 4 or 5 years ago when the West was, every single series was going seven games, including the miraculous 1-8 Spurs versus Mavs series that went seven games, and people were just like, what's going on? How is Rick Carlisle even doing this? That's kind of what this playoffs reminded me of for the first round. So it's just been great. Less exciting kind of overall, if I had to think about it, because a lot of like the teams you expected to go through went through.
Mm-hmm.
But on the individual game basis, game per game, it was just really exciting stuff.
Yeah, and to me it seems like the West was more one-sided, where we kind of knew who the teams were, even though in this case, I think this probably would have been the four teams that we chose to go on, but it just seemed like the West has been decided for weeks already, and the East, anyone had a chance, even though the teams that we would expect to win won, it just seemed like they were closer matchups, which the East hasn't had an exciting playoff years lately, it feels like it's always the West teams we're talking about. So I do think that was a nice little change to see that it's anyone's game in the East.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that sentiment. I think with the West and the East, you kind of have to watch them through different lenses. With the West, it's all year long, everybody's known it's going to be Rockets, Warriors, and that's what you've been anticipating. So watching the first and second round of the Western Conference, it's been more of seeing kind of what those teams could challenge the Rockets and the Warriors with, how they could expose a few flaws and see if they could really show either gaps or weaknesses in either team. With the East, it's been like, well, the Philly should have won, but the Celtics came through. Or Indiana probably should have won, but the Cavs came through. And, you know, poor Toronto and Dwayne Casey and things like that. So it's been a little bit more variable in the East, which has been fun. With the West, it's more of a, let's see what the first and second round have in store for the Warriors and Rockets and see if they can capitalize on any of those things that they saw.
What do you think about both the Pacers and the Bucks? They were teams that both overachieved, did more than we thought they would, and they seem to have bright futures with bright stars. What do you see with those teams going forward?
So the Bucks is an interesting case because they had not the best coach in the world. I don't want to say a horrible coach. He was basically a horrible coach, but he was more of like a sub, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the substitute teacher just couldn't get done in the playoffs. They had more talent, maybe top end, than the Celtics. But overall, their team construction isn't built around Giannis. It's kind of going two different ways. They didn't really know what Giannis was. And so they started acquiring these kind of random pieces. So you have Jabari. Does Jabari really work well with Giannis? Because Giannis going forward is what you want to key in on and build around. And you want to try and keep him for as long as you possibly can. And so does Giannis and Thon Maker work? Does Eric Bledsoe even the type of point guard that you need for Giannis? Does Tony Snell really give you that much more for a 3-and-D wing I think it's mostly their roster construction is the problem, and less about their coaching and less about going forward what their team could do.
In my opinion, we saw Brad Stevens exploit their weaknesses that if they don't fix in the offseason, teams are going to keep doing it. We saw for a while the Bucks would get switches and get like Rozier on Giannis, for example, and Rozier would just back up and force Giannis to shoot, and he wouldn't want to shoot. We saw kind of the same thing with Simmons, where he would just want to pass it. As the series went on, he became a better shooter as he realized they were giving it to him, but it's not something they could allow as an offense. And same thing defensively with Don Maker. He had some monster games with blocks where he was basically getting a lot of chase down blocks. They adjusted the offense so he wasn't getting the opportunities to get the chase down blocks. And these are things where maybe moving a piece like Bledsoe or moving a piece like Parker, like you said, they might be able to bring in some other pieces that would more complement Giannis, kind of like what the Sixers did last offseason, bringing in just shooters, or they did during the season well, bringing shooters to put around their pieces. They need something like the same type of thing with the Bucks, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think their first steps are figuring out how to construct a team around Giannis that is going to complement him. Because, you know, in 2 years, he's going to be a decent shooter. And then that's really the only thing lacking from his game, other than just having help, right? So you're looking at either moving Bledsoe, because I honestly don't think Bledsoe is the right type of point guard for him. Moving Parker, because Parker's definitely going to be unhappy not being that kind of primary option.
And or I think he's restricted this offseason.
Yeah, and he's coming off of two separate ACL surgeries over the last 4 years. So, I mean, what you could try and move him for, or even match and then move him in December, is going to be interesting. But, like, their roster from top to bottom is just a bunch of parts that don't really fit together, that individually you're like, yeah, that's a, you know, a decent player, that's a sixth player, seventh player off the bench, but collectively they don't mesh. So the GM for the Bucks has his work cut out for him, trying to figure out exactly how to construct a roster much like Philly did around Ben Simmons and Embiid. And we could talk about Philly in a little bit, but no matter who they get for a coach, whether it's like, you know, Coach Bud or even Becky Hammond, which would be awesome, it's not going to matter if they're playing with the wrong types of players on the court.
We just saw one of the Spurs assistants get a coaching job, and I was really disappointed it wasn't Becky Hammond, because it seems like she is the next coach that I feel like should be getting a chance, and I also think it would be like a landmark thing, you know what I mean? So it would be a cool story, and I also think she would do an awesome job.
Yeah, I mean, Pau Gasol had this great piece on the Players Tribune about Becky Hammond, because he's been with the Spurs now for two seasons with her as an assistant. It makes a lot of sense that that other coach went to Charlotte. I forgot his name. Escapes me right now. But he's been highly touted for like the last three seasons, and he was the associate head coach for the Spurs. So it makes a lot of sense that he would have gotten kind of that first job off the Spurs bench. The thing to think about with Becky is that, A, the Milwaukee Bucks are interviewing like 10 different candidates right now. It's great that she's getting interviews, but I mean, if I was in her shoes, yes, you don't turn down an NBA opportunity, but is there something maybe a little bit more suited to kind of the Spurs style versus like going into the dumpster fire that is Milwaukee and their ownership changing control in every, what, 2 or 3 years? Because they have that trifecta ownership control where like they change who manages it every 3 years. And it just seems like a weird spot to try and fall into. I'm sure either this year or in a next season there might be great opportunities out there, because there always is.
So what do you think about the Pacers this playoff? It seems like they really surprised a lot of people, and Oladipo really came on the radar of NBA fans.
So if you even asked the Indiana Pacers front office at the beginning of the season, they were, you know, shooting for maybe like 40 wins and maybe the playoffs, maybe. But they totally overachieved, and that's great, and it's obviously led by Victor Oladipo. But they also have a couple of kind of glaring issues on their roster as well that they just have to address. Like, who is their second guy? Is it going to be Miles Turner? Or is Miles Turner really more of a better offensive version of Clint Capella, right? Which isn't bad, but we've seen every year that you can't have that guy be your second guy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So they need kind of that, not Robin to Victor Oladipo's Batman, but somebody who can get a bucket when Victor Oladipo is getting double teamed, right? Someone who can playmake. That was the problem that the Cavs exploited throughout the end of the Indiana series, was they were just double teamed Victor Oladipo. Victor would pass out of it, and then he's passing to teammates who are decent players, but they're not really playmakers, and they can't create for themselves or for other people, right? They're kind of relying on Victor to playmake for them. So if you take him out of the equation, then you get what happened in the series, which is kind of unfortunate. But, I mean, Victor Oladipo reminds me of Dwayne Wade 2004?
Mm-hmm.
2004, 2005. He had this really great game against LeBron James. It was just like a regular season game, and they spent like the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter literally just going back and forth, guarding each other, going to the hole one-on-one, and you can see a little bit of Dwayne Wade in Victor Oladipo, which is like awesome. You know, Dwayne Wade is one of the top five two guards of all time, so kudos to Victor Oladipo. But Dwayne Wade's also had secondary people, veterans that can help him. And Indiana's just like a young team that had kind of spare parts. And if they can create the right types of spare parts or get some quality draft picks that, you know, can really complement Oladipo, then, I mean, they're going to be great going forward. But they run into the similar situation that Milwaukee runs into, right? Which is they have this really star and great player going forward. However, they need to really bring in a team around them to support.
Yeah, and they need to be careful this offseason, like you said, where they need to bring in a Robin to Oladipo's Batman. They need to make sure they don't bring in a Robin to Brooke Lopez, because that would just be a disaster.
What they should do is focus on bringing every past and or future Indiana star back to the Pacers, right?
Yeah.
So get both Zeller brothers, not even just one, just both of them, and see if they can get any other person who's ever played for Indiana. See if they can trade for Eric Gordon, maybe. It's a really fun story. Everybody's loved Oladipo. Everybody's loved the sort of was lost in Orlando, was more lost in OKC, and has kind of had this resurgence because people believed in him, right? How much of that resurgence is because he spent a year with Russell Westbrook and was like, oh, this is how you're supposed to train and act and prepare for an NBA season? And how much of that was just him getting the opportunity? I don't know. But if you ask him, it's about the preparation and the training, right? He has that text message 20 minutes after Game 7 to his trainer, like, I want to start tomorrow. When do we start? Kind of thing. And that's something you love. But at the same time, Victor can only do so much by himself.
It's interesting you said Eric Gordon, because now that you say that, I feel like he would be a great fit on that team.
I mean, Eric Gordon is now a great fit for basically any team. Like, think of a giant tank of a two guard who can shoot threes like crazy.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to hear me say and throw Eric Gordon's name into any team, but just because he fits so well with what the NBA wants to do now.
So what have been some of your favorite stories or events that have happened so far in the playoffs?
Definitely, I've loved personally how much the rookies have been impactful and actually like made a difference. We haven't had a lot of rookie walls so much as, oh my god, the rookies are carrying their teams. You have Mitchell, you have Simmons, you have Tatum as like, you know, your big three rookies of the season and of the playoffs. But then you have some of the lesser known guys who kind of just, and some of the younger guys that are just like helping out where they can and filling in for roles and not really making any crazy mistakes. Like Looney for the Golden State Warriors, who's just kind of like doing his thing and now is taking over Petrula, right? Like these rookies are crazy. They're so ready for this type of stage, and I don't even know how they're like managing physically, but it's been super fun to watch. Like, oh my god, this is going to be the future. It reminds me of kind of that like 04 to 07 where you had like the 03, 04 draft classes, and you're like, oh man, like we get to see LeBron and CP3 and Wade and Bosh and all these
Dirko,
all these great players for the future, and you're like, this is going to be so much fun.
you can see a new wave of basketball forming before our eyes. When you talk about the big three rookies, it probably depends on the situation, but if they were to do a redraft, where do you think they would go in order?
Are we talking about the order in which the teams that picked would pick them, or are we just talking about, like, who is the best rookie overall?
Just like a big board, yeah. Who's the best?
So Mitchell's definitely been number one. Much as I love Tatum, and we're both Celtics fans, but as much as I love Tatum, like, Mitchell's just been on another level. And then it would probably go Tatum, and then honestly Lonzo was great, except for his shoulder injury that kind of derailed him. And then I don't even know if we heard much from a lot of other rookies throughout the season. You know who we definitely didn't hear from is Markel Fultz. Mm-hmm.
How do you compare Simmons to the other rookies? Even though he wasn't in this draft class, would he be the first pick, you think?
So it's interesting, right? What are you trying to look for? With Simmons, you have someone who is like a generational talent, but he can't shoot. Mm-hmm. But neither could Jason Kidd, right? And I think that's the comp that people should be making, because a lot of people like to make the Magic Johnson comp, which I don't think is completely fair, given how advanced Magic Johnson was at this stage for his like first year. Magic Johnson could score. Magic Johnson could shoot the basketball and make a bucket. Magic Johnson could control the basketball court. What Simmons is reminds me a lot of Jason Kidd, where he controls the pace, he controls the game, his passing is on a different level, his footwork, which Jason Kidd never gets as much credit for, but has like maybe the best footwork of any guard ever, and the ability to like stop after running full speed and seeing angles and moving his feet just slightly enough to open up an angle. That's what Simmons has, right? And Jason Kidd couldn't shoot either. Yet Jason Kidd ends up on the all-time three-point list at like 3 or 4. So it's definitely something that can be learned. It's just, I don't know how you project for that.
Yeah, I think with Simmons, he's very interesting because he's one of the people that have come into the basketball world that it's so strongly defined what he can do and what he can't do, where a lot of other players have like this gray area that people are already like almost putting him in boxes, like this is what he is, when he's still, like you're saying, he can develop into a Jason Kidd level shooter and stuff, other parts of his game, where people just think that, you know, we'll just rely on his strengths instead of rounding out his full game, because he does have a lot of upside, but it's going to be interesting to see how he develops.
So if you want to pivot into a Philly question real quick.
Sure.
The thing about Philly and how their team is constructed, that the moment they get out of their normal offense and dump the ball down to Embiid, it's Embiid one-on-one with four people not doing anything or touching the ball. No movement, no screens, no back cuts, no anything, right? And that just kills any type of momentum, any type of rhythm that any of the players have developed. And that really falls on Simmons, I think. Because if you look, like everybody talks about Simmons' shooting or lack thereof, or in his inability to even want to take a shot. But what I've seen a lot is his inability to be more of a Steph Curry and move without the ball, really keep the engagement of the entire offense when it goes down to a Simmons. Or no, sorry, when it goes down to an Embiid in the post. And I think that's something he's really got to work on.
You know who would be a perfect fit for that? LeBron. Because, I mean, we talked about this article, or I sent you this article where Brian Windhorst basically says the reason LeBron is so good this season is because he walks a lot on the court and he doesn't run around when the ball's not coming to him. So it's almost like they're setting it up for LeBron perfectly to be able to slack. But you know what I think the 76ers are really strong at? Dropping confetti. I think that was my favorite moment of the playoffs so far, just because I have, as I've documented before, some very strong sports schadenfreude, just watching people, you know, mess up or pee too exuberant. He would fit anywhere, obviously, but would LeBron be a seamless fit for the Sixers? Would it help Simmons and Embiid, or would it hurt Simmons and Embiid with their development?
So I think it's actually both answers. It's going to help Embiid tremendously. Embiid is just going to soak in LeBron James for all it's worth, because Embiid doesn't need the ball all the time. He needs touches for offensive possessions, but he's not a rhythm type of player. Mm-hmm. Simmons is going to, I think it's going to hinder immensely, because Simmons and LeBron play very similar styles where they need control of the court and the ball and the offense. If not, they get kind of out of a rhythm. I mean, we talk about, you know, LeBron walking and conserving energy. If you looked at LeBron in, you know, his first 5 years, he never did any of that. He was crazy. Mm-hmm. But now he's in his 15th year. He's got over, what, 25,000 minutes ever played. And he's, like, looking for little ways to actually just conserve energy, which I don't think is something that would really help with Philadelphia. Besides the kind of cultural impact of having, like, the LeBron-esque passive-aggressive tweets and, like, this team needs to grow up and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know if that's right for this core. I think for this core, the personality needs to run through Embiid. And similarly on how the personality of Golden State runs through Draymond.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Simmons, who acts very much like a Steph or a Clay, where he's just like, yeah, this is our team, but Embiid speaks for kind of everybody. And I think that's how they play, too.
Yeah, when you're talking about the way that Simmons handles himself when he's off ball or when he doesn't have the ball in his hands and he's not moving around and not making plays, if LeBron goes to the team when he has the ball, it's really, like you said, it's going to hamper what Simmons can do. It's going to hurt his game more than it's going to help. I think you're totally right on that.
As much as I love watching LeBron do LeBron things, because it's like, hey, we get to watch the first or second greatest player of all time just like decide on a court, on a possession to like do something crazy and go to like some other level. Like, hey, like LeBron's decided this possession that he's going to destroy the Raptors' entire season with this like, you know, one pass or one fadeaway or one dunk. As much fun as that is to watch, that's less fun to watch if you know that your two guard now is just standing over there who can't even shoot because he's Ben Simmons and is just watching this kind of thing. You know, you want to see a more diverse style of basketball in Philly and not the LeBron James show.
So speaking of the LeBron James show, what do you predict will happen this round with both LeBron and just that series in general?
I'm more excited for the Celtics-Cavs matchup than I am for the Philadelphia-Cavs matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly due to the fact that I think LeBron James hasn't faced a defense like this in months or even since last season in the finals, where everybody's on a string. Everybody is built to switch and guard every other position. And really, it's going to be a test of LeBron getting Kyle Korver and Kevin Love involved in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Or is LeBron just going to go revert back to kind of his bully ball? Because he knows he owns the East, and he knows he owns any team, right? And if Kevin Love and Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith are engaged, then it's really hard to keep up with them. But if the Celtics can create this wall, like they've done for Giannis and they've done for Simmons, where we're just going to let LeBron shoot, we are not going to let him get into the paint, and we're going to stay at home on everybody else, then can the Cavs even score 85 points?
Yeah. And when you talk about almost how they're playing positionless basketball, they do it on defense, but they also do it on offense. And at a certain point, Tyronn Lue's going to have to make the decision if it's worth keeping Korver even in, if defensively there's not a single person on the court Korver will be able to cover in this matchup, at least out of the starters.
Yeah, that's a fun thing about the Celtics roster, in particular for this season, is that everybody on the roster, with the exception of Baines and maybe Semi Ojeleye, like everybody can take their man off the dribble, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at getting, if Kevin Love is guarding Baines, you're throwing Baines into the corner for the three and you're pulling Kevin away from defensive rebounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if Kevin's guarding Al Horford, Al Horford's on the three. And that's what they did with Embiid, specifically Baines, pulling Embiid away from the hoop, open up all this space for Terry Rozier, for Jaylen Brown, for Marcus Smart, for Jason Tatum to drive, and they're all average to above average finishers at the rim. So it's gonna be interesting. A fun LeBron anecdote that I heard on a Bill Simmons podcast the other day with David Griffin, I think. And this was like, I don't know, last year in the playoffs. CJ Miles is on offense for a last out of bounds play, and LeBron is guarding him, and LeBron literally goes to CJ and he's like, "No, CJ, you're supposed to stand over here. And you're supposed to pin down for DeRozan over there." And it's just like, LeBron is just on another level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is going to be a fun kind of chess match for him. It's really LeBron versus Brad Stevens and LeBron versus Al Horford's defense. And so I'm excited for that. I think at the end of the day, talent kind of wins out.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the 04 Pistons where team wins out over talent. So I think the series goes seven. And I think it's one of those series that everything's kind of close. There's maybe one or two games that are win by 10, win by 15. But at the end of the day, I think LeBron probably pulls it out just on the simple fact that the Celtics maybe aren't able to put the ball in the bucket at the end for the last 2 minutes. Like they've shown sometimes they just can't. And then LeBron or gets to the rim or Kevin Love hits a corner three or Kyle Korver hits a random three or J.R. Smith hits a random three. And you're just like, you know what? They just hit the shot and you got to live with it.
It's a huge disappointment that the two teams made this huge blockbuster trade in the offseason. And besides the rookies flipping, no one else involved in that trade will be in the series. I don't remember who that Euro center was that they sent. I think he's on the roster of the Cavs still, but he's not getting any minutes.
If LeBron ends up staying in Cleveland, which honestly, like, I give it more of a 55-60% chance of him staying in Cleveland, just because where else can he go that's really going to be more impactful than staying in Cleveland, then really the series to watch is next year, Cavs versus Celtics, which will be so exciting when you have, like, Hayward and Kyrie back and whoever else they get into Cleveland to help retool that team. But I don't think we should think about, like, what this series is missing as much as, like, look forward to, oh my goodness, the Celtics just took Philly, who everybody thought in the East was the most talented team, to school. And the Cavs have now hit the Cavs level of offense once again. So it's a nice, not David versus Goliath, but like, you know, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. And who's actually going to get the belt in the end. So it's pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, and when we look at the West, it's tough to see what the biggest storyline is. To me, it's Chris Paul finally going over the hump. It could also be James Harden and how the Warriors defend him. What do you think is going to be the storyline of the West?
I think it's going to be a couple of different storylines. One, it's going to be everybody's been sleeping on the Rockets' ability to defend the Warriors. Because we know the Rockets can put up points. We know the Warriors can put up points. We know the Warriors can defend when they want to. But everybody's still thinking the Rockets are last year's Rockets or they're Rockets from years before. And this team's actually a really good defensive team, specifically in the playoffs. They have Chris Paul, who has always been a great on-ball defender. They have Mbamute, who is their kind of wing anchor. They have Clint Capella, who's playing out of his mind. It's really, how does James Harden fit in the defense? If he tries, you know, even a little bit, who they can't really hide him on anybody, unless they're trying to hide him on Draymond, and Draymond's just going to take him to town.
Yep.
So it's really going to be interesting to see the defense of the Rockets and how that sustains, and if they try and waste energy there, or if they just say, you know what, we're just going to go full tilt into offense and try to outscore the Warriors, which hasn't really been greatest of ideas, but I think that's going to be the big storyline. Secondly, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the Warriors, and this happens to them all the time, is they are going to sort of relax and not think about anything. And they're going to say, oh, wait a second, we're the better team. Why aren't we winning? And it's because literally a lack of effort or lack of trying or lack of intensity, because they just fall into this malaise of, oh my goodness, we're better at four out of the five positions than any other team. So do we have to try that hard? Right? It's that motivation. And you saw it in the Pelican series where the Pelicans took a game and then Draymond sent that crazy long text to Kevin Durant saying like, hey, blah, 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 blah. And Kevin Durant was like, yeah, I got this. And they flipped the switch. And, you know, flipping the switch is a thing that they can do. But if they don't flip the switch in game two against the Rockets, right? Now they're 1-1 going back to Houston. And the Rockets love playing at Houston. And if they don't flip the switch, you know, and take one in Houston, then they're coming back home down 3-2 or 3-1, right? So it's about, can they sustain that kind of intensity? And can Draymond stay within himself and be Draymond while also not hindering the team?
And I think this series, more than anyone, Capella's going to come out of it looking like a star. Because it's going to be, you know, national TV games, but also he's the one matchup that the Warriors don't really have a sensible, you know, answer to. It's possible they can scheme around it, but he's both offensively and defensively, he's going to own the inside of the paint.
Yeah, I mean, what Capella does really well is he does those short rolls to the basket. After a screen, after a slip screen, even just like off of an ISO from James Harden. He does those really well. Now, who's going to stop him? Is it going to be Draymond? Well, is Draymond going to be switched on to somebody else? You know, is it going to be Kevin Durant? Are those roll downs going to, you know, slow down the Warrior offense? Because the Warrior offense just spent an entire series practicing. We have to run every time down the court, offense and defense, because that's what the Pelicans were doing. So the Warriors might be ready for that. The problem with the Rockets offense is that when they miss, you have James Harden at the rim missing. You have two shooters in each corner and probably Capella trailing. Mm-hmm. That means four people below the free throw line, which means you have easy fast breaks for the Warriors. So literally, like, they can't be missing at the rim, mm-hmm. or else they're just going to get fast breaked on all game long.
Yeah. So as I was talking about Capella making the leap, for the first couple rounds of the playoffs, we saw it was seemed like mostly guards that really took the biggest jump in their value. So what do you think about those guards? It was McConnell, it was Holiday, Rondo, Rozier. Do you think this is saying a lot about the league becoming a guard league, or is it just the fact that it's not a guard league, so almost any guard can step in and do these things?
I think you saw stocks rise for different guards for different reasons. And I think that's important to think about because, yeah, it is transitioning towards a guards league, but it's really transitioning more towards a versatile wings mm-hmm. league, right? So that 6'5 to 6'8 versatile athletic wing who can shoot threes, who can play defense, who can get rebounds, who can switch on defense, they're the ones that are going to really be taking over this league. But for each of the people you just mentioned, so like TJ McConnell, his stock is rising, mostly due to the fact that he plays in a way that he is just good at all the random things, mm-hmm. but not great at anything, which is something that complemented the Philly team at that moment because the Celtics were built for this particular playoff series against Philly to stop Ben Simmons from driving to the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're like, go ahead and shoot. TJ McConnell can drive, but he's not that great. He can shoot, but he's not that great. He could pass, but he's not that great. But he can do all the things. So if you can do everything, then you can't just like hone in on, we'll just stop you on one thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, if you're going to stop me from driving, I'll just shoot it, and I'm a decent shooter. If you're going to stop me from shooting, I'll pass it. I'm a decent passer. He could do all these little things. He was more of like a utility player in the vein of like an Andre Iguodala, who could like do all these things, not anything super or not anything the best, but he could just do all the things, and that's invaluable. Showed why he originally got that big money from the Pelicans and what Philly had thought he was going to be when they first drafted him. Now he's like, he doesn't have his personal tragedy to deal with. He is not injured anymore. He could be kind of this large, strong guard who can take it to the rim. But you saw, like, when he was in the Warrior series, like, they put him on Kevin Durant, but at the end of the day, like, Kevin Durant's just going to shoot over anybody. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't even matter. He's spending all that energy on defense, and he just really couldn't help Anthony Davis on offense.
If Boogie was there, do you think the three of them are good enough to be like a big three to make a long playoff run?
So if Boogie was there, I don't even think they would have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just because when Boogie went down, they revamped their offense to center around run and gun Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis played out of his mind, which is awesome. But once that happened, you move Anthony Davis to the five where he needs to be, and you give him a shooter and Mirotić at the four, and you guys are playing a faster pace, up-tempo game where you can't do that with Boogie because Boogie's walking half the time. He's just not fast enough. He doesn't have the stamina for that. It's not his game. As good as Boogie is, their offense and their defense and their whole kind of culture changed when he went down, and it ended up being for the better.
What do you think they should do with him this offseason?
He's going to want the max contract. I don't know if you give it to him. I think you try and sign and trade him, or you just let him walk. Because you need to figure out, you can't have him on your books like that, especially coming off an Achilles injury, especially given the fact that now you know the right way to build around Anthony Davis is to get him people like a Jrue Holiday who can shoot and drive, a Mirotić who can shoot, and 3-and-D wings. Because you have your superstar in Anthony Davis who can change the game. You just need to build around him to support and help him and not have somebody who is going to take kind of possessions away from him, if that makes sense.
Say that the Raptors called them up and offered DeRozan for Boogie. Do you think that would work for either team?
I don't know if that's the right move for either team, really. Because if you're putting Boogie in Toronto, they don't have the room for him, cap-wise. B, you also have to move Valanciunas out of there, which would be fine. But, like, what are you building? Lowry and Boogie and some, like, first and second-year players? And for the Pelicans, I don't know if DeRozan is the right fit, whereas he is a prototypical kind of, like, mid-range two-guard who, you know, needs the ball a lot to score, is less of a shooter, quote-unquote, and more of a creator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, once again, taking kind of the possessions out of Anthony Davis's hands. So I don't know if that's the right move for either.
So what do you think the Raptors should do in general? I mean, a lot of it's going to obviously depend on waiting to see kind of what LeBron does, but let's say LeBron decides to stay in the East. Do the Raptors just keep going at what they have and hoping that they can beat him or hoping he ages out or something?
I don't think they should run it back with this exact team. They have a solid young core of, like, third, fourth, fifth, sixth players in, like, OG, in Powell, in Van Fleet. You have all these, like, good complementary pieces. I don't know if the DeRozan-Lowry star power is the right mix. I think you can win with two guards. I think you can win with either one of those people. But I don't know if together they fit the right way on a basketball court.
So I wrote an article for sportsthewebsite.com, which you are now a wonderful member of, where I just came up with things that Toronto could do. And one of the things I mentioned is something that I think you don't really agree with was DeRozan for Wiggins, where I think, you know, Wiggins hasn't quite taken the leap that they wanted, and they need another star on the team, I feel like. And for the Raptors, it would kind of push back their windows, extend it longer, and for the Wolves, it would give them more of a star. But you don't think he'd be a good fit with Jimmy Butler?
I think they're literally the exact same player, and that's the problem.
But we talk about position as basketball.
Correct, except when your two of your highest paid and highest talented players play the exact same, not position, but the exact same skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between positionless basketball and skill set basketball.
Yep.
First of all, Minnesota should be building around Karl-Anthony Towns. And literally everybody in the entire world agrees. Like, why aren't you giving Karl-Anthony Towns the ball or the possessions to make good things happen, right? Like, that's their biggest hindrance, which has to do a little bit with, like, Jimmy Butler and being there, but also just has to do with, like, their organization, their roster, and their coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if DeRozan helps Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't know if DeRozan helps that team get better, just because he lacks the outside shooting. Plus, DeRozan is basically a Jimmy Butler, like a discount Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather have Jimmy Butler on my team.
Too.
So I already have Jimmy Butler. Why do I need DeMar DeRozan? You know what I mean?
Yep. The thing that sucks for the Raptors, though, is that they're going to be like 30 mil over the cap. So the only way they're going to get better is if they move one of those two stars. So I guess it's, they kind of have to.
Well, I think they can move Valanciunas. What they really need to do is get rid of Ibaka.
Yep.
I don't know how they ever get rid of Ibaka.
It's almost like they have to offer a first-round pick for someone just to take the contract or something, if that even
True.
Gets it done.
But, like, what would you get back for that, right?
Nothing.
So that's the problem. You would need either, like, a Capella-type player or DeAndre Jordan for moving DeAndre Jordan into that sort of, ooh, here's a great one for you. DeAndre, Tobias, and you move Ibaka and Valanciunas. And, you know, whatever other players or salary to make it work. But I think, like, DeAndre in Toronto with a Tobias Harris in Toronto, who's on a fantastic contract.
Mm-hmm.
And you go with, like, this weird small ball where it's small except for DeAndre Jordan. So, mm-hmm. like, you have Tobias Harris at the four, who isn't a four, but, like, it's a small ball four.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, a giant rim protector and roller in DeAndre Jordan. And Tobias Harris is the third option scorer/playmaker that you need beyond Lowry and DeRozan. And then you have your OG, and you have your Van Fleet, and you have your Powell. So, I mean, I think that is probably a better situation, assuming that, like, the Clippers are just trying to tank for the future.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jordan's going to be a free agent, so it's possible if he's just done with Clippers. Wait, he is a free agent, right? Or does he have an opt-in or something?
I think he has a player option, but okay. I think he's looking for, like, a max extension.
Yeah, so if he wants out of there anyways, he can force, I guess, a trade or sign and trade where something like that might work out pretty well for both teams. It's better than the Clippers getting nothing. At least, I don't know, Ibaka, you know, people don't want to go to the Clippers. If they're going to LA, they're going to the Lakers. At least Ibaka gives them something. But yeah, that would be interesting. When you go back to the T-Wolves, do you think that Cat can be an elite player? He kind of took a step back in general this year, but a lot in the playoffs. There was some games where he totally, you know, disappeared off the radar. What do you think they need to do to make Cat better? Is it kind of like an Anthony Davis situation where they need to basically build around him to get players that can put him in the right position to do what he does best?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things about Karl-Anthony Towns is, one, he is a good teammate, so he's not the type of person who's going to be like, I need the ball, I demand the ball. But at the same time, you want him to do that because he's the best player on the floor.
Like, KG had that same problem.
Right, and I think if you look at, it's more of a team culture and coaching problem where they're not saying, hey, you know, in the final game against Houston in the fourth quarter, why is Karl-Anthony Towns only touching the ball, you know, on three possessions, right? Like, yes, I understand, Jimmy Butler, you think you can score the ball every time, but that's not going to help our team win in the future or now. So I think a lot of it has to do with how you build the offense and the team around Karl-Anthony Towns. I think, in my heart of hearts, I think Wiggins and Towns could be good together.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they don't have the right coaching around them to say, like, this is how we focus and highlight you two in our offense. Because oftentimes, like, you can go three quarters of a game and be like, oh, wait, Wiggins plays on this team. Mm-hmm. And you can go an entire quarter and be like, oh, look, Karl-Anthony Towns took a post-up. That needs to be changed.
A lot of that, I feel like, has to do with Tibbs, where we've seen him develop certain types of players, but there's also players where I feel like could be a lot better that he either drives into the ground or just forces. He's very stubborn and will force them to do certain things where it might not work with their play set. Like, we saw the way he developed Taj Gibson, which was great because he's the type of player he likes, a hard-nosed guy. But we've seen plenty of guys where they just link up with Tibbs, and if you're in the doghouse, you're in the doghouse forever, or he's just going to force you to play outside your game. So I wonder if a coaching change would help Cat a lot.
I think the problem with Tibbs is his offense is stuck in the mid-2000s, where it's mm-hmm. a lot of isolation-heavy, weak-side, ball one-on-one-heavy, and not what today's NBA is, which is a lot of passing, a lot of cutting, a lot of sets, a lot of split action, a lot of, like, floppy, a lot of these different sets to get people open in better positions and get people touching the ball. And you see that's a problem when these teams revert back to this kind of isolation one-on-one basketball and they don't understand it just gets the rhythm out of everybody. And you saw that with the Philadelphia game when Embiid would just dump it into Embiid in the post and they're like, okay, go get us, you know, a bucket, but everybody's just standing around. And so for the next, you know, five possessions, people are just out of rhythm.
Yep. So I'm going to kind of tie that back to when we were talking about the four guards that really excelled in the playoffs. We had Rondo, we had Rozier, we had McConnell, and we had Holiday. If in a vacuum, if they're all free agents this offseason, how would you rank them?
It's McConnell, Holiday, and who else?
Rozier and Rondo.
So Rondo is definitely going to be last just because he's the oldest.
Yeah.
And he offers you the least amount of skill set. You're probably going Drew Holiday and then Terry Rozier and then McConnell, and all for different reasons and all for whatever you need. But I mean, those guards are gonna be hopefully good in the future. Hopefully it's not like one of those 1 year blimp where it's just like, oh man, they were really good, and then you always remember them as being like really good for that 1 year.
Well, all of them we've seen glimpses in the future, in the past we've seen glimpses, so it's almost like if they can hold it together consistently, like you said. And with Rondo specifically, he's very situationally valuable. I think he should stay in a situation like he's in because he either is in a team where he has it, or if he doesn't, he is out. Like we saw him with, was it the Mavericks, where he just, you know, it wasn't the best system for him, so he just quit on the team. So it's almost he might have to take a really low he would have to take a low contract to stay with a team that just work best for his style.
A lot of these guys are all for, and I mean, to a larger extent, a lot of players are situational, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you put Curry on the Hornets in his home state of North Carolina, like, he's going to be Steph Curry, but he's not going to be, like, MVP Steph Curry. He's just going to be dragging, you know, a team to maybe the playoffs.
And when we talk about Terry Rozier, are you for or against the nickname Scary Terry?
I mean, I'm for any nickname that's fun to say and has alliteration or similar sounds to it. I was a big fan of the Slim Reaper for Kevin Durant way back in the day, and he was not a fan of that. So nothing against kind of these scary or Grim Reaper motif nicknames. It works for him. It works for the t-shirts. It's just great brand marketing overall.
It's a reference to a Rick and Morty character, so almost like how they did this whole over-the-top thing with Drew Bledsoe. They should find a way to tie in Rick and Morty somehow some of these promotions. And when it comes to Rozier, him and Smart are both going to be hitting the free agent market at the same time, about a year apart, actually. But who would you rather keep in Boston?
For Boston, I think their best bet is to sell Terry at his high right now and get back something really awesome for him, and keep Smart. Smart is like a perfect player for this team because they're not asking him to do the offensive tasks that he can't do. He has a very specific and defined role, which works for this team. And when you get Kyrie Irving back, you don't... Terry Rozier, as a overqualified backup point guard, is going to turn into what Bledsoe was when he was an overqualified backup point guard for Chris Paul on the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be like, we have to get rid of him. He's going to leave. So sell high now. Because Terry, I think, still has a year on his contract, and then he becomes restricted free agent. So that's pretty enticing for a team that wants kind of like this explosive, defensive-minded point guard like the Bucks.
What do you think his career would be like if he went to a team like the Bucks?
I think Terry thinks he's the best player on the team,
mm-hmm.
On whatever team he's on, which is, you know, a mindset a lot of NBA players have. But if he goes to a team like the Bucks or the Timberwolves or, you know, Phoenix or anywhere, he's got to still do a little bit of learning of how do I make everybody better because I'm the point guard and not, you know, the three, the forward.
The way he's headed, I almost see him as like his best career path if he doesn't take that step is he can be Jamal Crawford for a team for a long time.
Oh, he can be better than Jamal Crawford for a long time.
You think so?
Yeah. He's not a shooter. He is a playmaker, and that's and that's really valuable. That means you're not just coming in off the bench in the last 4 minutes of the first quarter to jack up threes. It means, you know, you're actually being a backup point guard or starting point guard and running an offense. And that's, I feel like that's a little bit more valuable, and that's a little bit better of a set.
What do you think is going to happen with Melo? It seems like he's going to opt in. So what happens to OKC if he opts in?
OKC basically dies a slow and painful death until they're no longer making the playoffs.
If Westbrook is stuck with him for another year, how long do you think Westbrook is in jail for losing his mind?
So I don't think Westbrook sees his teammates like other NBA players see their teammates. So if you watch LeBron James play, he sees teammates who are not good, and he says, like, they suck. I'm just going to not give up, but, like, just be disinterested in the whole thing. Russell Westbrook sees teammates who suck and says, I am going to annihilate everybody no matter what. He doesn't have a different mode. So even if Melo was there, he would say, like, oh, Melo is great. It doesn't matter. I'm going to annihilate everybody anyway. So I don't think it changes his mindset as much as it literally just, like, it kills the team because it's such a huge cap hit. He is a sieve on offense. He's not even, like, a good spot-up shooter. The problem with Melo is his game is predicated on a rhythm and touches, and he needs, like, 20, 25 touches a game to just, like, get into a shooting rhythm for a season. And when he's only getting 10 and he's only shooting 8 times, he doesn't have that same rhythm, and he's just not good on defense. He's not really a playmaker, so I don't really know how his career projects forward, but if he opts in, which he should, because mm-hmm. it's a buttload of money and he won't get any results, like, mm-hmm. it's not going to be helpful for the Thunder, who, at that point, we still don't know what Paul George is going to do, but most likely Paul George isn't going to stay there.
What do you think is going to be the biggest offseason move for San Antonio this offseason?
Get.
Do you think it's going to be a Leonard trade?
I don't think they trade Kawhi Leonard, because I don't think they get anything in return for him that is good enough, you know? Specifically with Leonard's coming off of an injury, we still don't know if he's going to be okay next season. Then he's going to be a free agent looking for a max contract, and what team's going to trade anything of value or even 80% value for that? Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I think Pop figured out a way to make it all work. If you read, like, Ramona Shelburne's piece on ESPN about the whole Kawhi situation, you get the feeling it's a lot of outside stuff and not necessarily Kawhi that's leading this.
It's like outside stuff like his people, yeah, but not necessarily him?
Yeah, his people. Specifically his agent and his uncle slash agent, who are most likely driving this type of situation. And it also has to do a lot with, like, the injury and being diagnosed one way by the Spurs and another way by independent doctors, and they're just concerned because this has been an ongoing issue for years now and it hasn't been resolved. So I on one side, you can be like, you can understand why Kawhi is like, I just want to be healthy and I just don't mm-hmm. trust what the Spurs doctors are saying. And on the other side, you can think about it like, well, I'm getting a lot of information and handling this in a non-professional way towards the team. So it's just like such a weird situation, but who knows where the Spurs go. Like, it really predicates on how they retool the team. Are they just going to try and run it back and, you know, add pieces and say like, hey, we're hoping to get Kawhi back. If not, we're, you know, an eighth seed again. Or are they trying to say like, let's sell it all and then rebuild again, which they haven't done in 20 years. And if they mm-hmm. rebuild again, is Pop staying there for the rebuild? Probably not. So then you have openings for like a Becky Hammon or somebody else. So I don't know where their future lies. I don't think they trade Kawhi.
Let's wrap it up with a couple things, I guess, about projections going forward. So the conference finals is starting. Which team do you think is going to win each series? And then assuming it's you have Golden State in the finals, which team out of the East do you think would be the better matchup against them to beat them?
So I think the Warriors win in six. I think the Rockets can basically match up with them except for Kevin Durant. And that's the mm-hmm. X factor, Y factor, Z factor. Like, it's the Kevin Durant factor, and that's just that's the problem. You can try and shut down Curry, and you can do that okay. You can try and shut down Klay. You can try and shut down Draymond. But at the end of the day, no one's stopping Kevin Durant if Kevin Durant wants to be engaged. That's where I think that series goes. I think the Cavs win it in seven against the Celtics just because I think it'll be a close series and LeBron James will just be able to score at the end, or he'll get somebody to score at the end and the Celtics just won't be able to get the ball in the bucket. But I think if the Warriors were to move on, which I think they do, I think the Celtics are a better matchup just because they can play a different level of defense against the Warriors than the Cavs will. The Cavs will be literally just trying to outscore them and hoping for the best and potentially playing bully ball again. Whereas the Celtics are just going to try and man up at every position. And really with the Celtics is all about, can they score enough? So I think that would be a little bit more interesting. As Boston fans, I think it'll be cool if they get there, because then our podcast can be, you know, a little bit more relevant to our region.
Yeah. And it's almost like you said, when it comes to the Celtics defending LeBron, they can just throw people at LeBron. In the same instance, they have all those players that can match up with the Golden State guys. And so, like, defensively, there won't be awful matchups, whereas other teams don't necessarily have that to throw at them. We've seen the last couple of years, I mean, the roster's turned around 80%, but we've seen them have the most success out of anybody the last couple of years against Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a fun conference finals for each side, and I don't think it's going to disappoint anybody. I think the worst part is going to be the schedule with random mm-hmm. off days in between.
Yeah, that is weird. So what do you think, you kind of hinted that you think it's most likely that he'll stay in Cleveland, but what do you think LeBron's going to do this offseason?
if he goes anywhere, it's probably the Lakers. For all the myriad of reasons outside of basketball that have been documented on the internet, you know, up the wazoo, where he's got two houses there, his kids like it there, that's where they live in the off season. His media empire is there. Magic Johnson as a mentor is there. And the Lakers are poised to be in fine positions for the next 5 years, cap-wise and player-wise. So I think if he goes anywhere, that's where he goes.
Do you think if he went there, he would almost, kind of what he does everywhere, and become the backdoor GM, but in that insist that Lonzo Ball gets traded just because he doesn't want to deal with the show, or do you think that will help him draw some attention off himself, the bad attention off himself?
If he goes to LA, I don't think he becomes the de facto GM, just because Rob Pelinka is really good, really strong, really smart. I don't think it's as weak of a position. It'd be more of a similar situation of him going to Miami, where mm-hmm. they had a strong front office. It'd be the same with the Lakers. Also, I don't think he would want to have Lonzo traded. From everything I've ever read, all the players actually really like Lonzo. Like, Lonzo is good.
I'm not necessarily asking about because not playing with Lonzo, but not wanting to be around the Ball family, I guess.
Yeah, with LeVar, which is, you know, super annoying. But, I mean, at the end of the day, maybe that distraction goes down with LeVar focusing on his other two sons more. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So, anything could happen. I think he stays in Cleveland. When he stays in Cleveland, he's an automatic conference finals berth. Like, that's just...
Yeah.
That's what he brings to the table. Like, you want to go to the conference finals? You want to go to the NBA finals in the East? Join LeBron's team.
Yeah, I mean, but next year it will be tough just depending on how the bracket breaks up, because this year it happened to be that the Sixers and the Celtics were in the same bracket, but next year if they're one of the teams is in the same bracket as Cleveland or even both, like, that would be a lot harder than it has been, you know, for the majority of his career to get through, I think.
Well, it depends on what Cleveland does, right? So, like, mm-hmm. do they upgrade at any positions at all? Are they able to get out of the $230 million payroll that they have? Can they move off the books like the JR and the Thompson contracts and get back better contracts? Can some of their younger players that they traded for, you know, grow? Who knows?
I think the problem with moving Thompson is I'm pretty sure he has the same agent as LeBron. Well, he hired LeBron's agency as his agent, so unless he was getting more money somehow in the thing, it'd be tough for them to move him.
I mean, at the end of the day, I think LeBron wants championships more than helping out
Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
So, do you have any rooting interest-wise in who wins the lottery? Are you rooting for anyone specific?
Probably the Mavs, just because I've always been a Mavs fan, and it would be nice.
Do you think they would go Luka to match up the Euros?
God, I would love Luka anywhere, but I don't think they get that high. What are they, like the third most chances.
Yeah, they have a 14% chance of getting the top pick, but they do have a 42% chance of getting a top three, and Luka might not necessarily go number one. It seems like there's a solid top four that's still bouncing around to figure out how they're going to plan out.
I would love the Mavs to get somebody who could actually, like, be dynamic with Dennis Smith. So, like, that would be fun. That would be fun for everybody.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. The Grizz are awful, but the Suns have the highest chance of getting the top pick, and I think bringing in a dynamic playmaker like Luka with Booker would just be, like, a really exciting team to watch for a while. But I guess none of the teams are very that exciting in the lottery, and that's why they're in the lottery. Oh, I guess I should ask one other thing. So the Celtics have a 3% chance of getting the 2 or 3 in the draft. Anything else is going to another team. So if you were the Celtics and you got, say, the second pick in the draft, who would you target?
Oh, God.
Well, so I wrote down the big four are Luka, Bagley, Bamba, and Jackson. Do any of them stick out to you as something that would fit in well with the Celtics?
So the problem with the Celtics is that at positions 1 through 5, they already have somebody great or on their way to be great. You know, you have Kyrie, who you'd want to keep forever. You have Jalen. You have Jason Tatum. You have Gordon Hayward. You have Al Horford. That's your starting five. I mean, in the top, if you're getting a top three, if you're looking to draft a future starter, I don't know if you're looking for more of like a Bamba who is going to be kind of a project so you can groom him over the next 3 or 4 years for when Horford leaves, or like a Luka who can make an impact tomorrow, or a Bagley who does he even fit in today's NBA anymore, or Jackson who is kind of like a young Marcus Morris. Like, I don't know. I think the Celtics would be better off potentially trading for future picks and running with the potential new team that they have coming in next year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of like what he did this year, right? He traded down, picked up another first, and just keep kicking the can down the road to keep the team going as long as he needs, and then when he needs to cash in, he cashes in, I guess.
Yeah.
So anything else you want to talk about while I have you here?
Not anything other than, like, I'm very excited for this playoffs to actually, you know, get started with these finals.
Yeah, maybe once this next round is done, we'll hook up again for another podcast about the finals.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Hopefully Celtics, Warriors, that'd be exciting.
That would probably be the most exciting for us, personally.
Yeah, I mean, besides the LeBron storyline, I think it would be the most exciting basketball option, but you never know, they can surprise us.
That's true.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, and thanks for joining Sports, the website, and everyone, you know, rate, review, all that fun stuff, and tune in next time. All right. Thanks, Sean.
Great talking to you, Mike. Bye.